Welcome to this week's Ortho Digest Rundown for June 22, 2026. This week, we indexed 216 new orthopedic studies across 34 journals. The 75 highest impact studies are featured on the site, and we're covering the top 25 studies in this audio digest. As always, studies are ranked by our impact algorithm, which weighs journal tier and level of evidence. Let's start with our first study. You and colleagues published in Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled Incisional Infiltration of Liposomal Bupivacaine in Geriatric Hip Fracture Surgery, a randomized parallel group trial. This single center, participant and assessor-blinded randomized controlled trial tested whether incisional liposomal bupivacaine infiltration added to standardized multimodal analgesia improved resting visual analog score pain at 48 hours in geriatric patients undergoing hemiarthroplasty or total hip arthroplasty for hip fracture. The primary endpoint showed no difference between groups, with median visual analog scores of 0 in both arms. However, liposomal bupivacaine significantly reduced activity pain at 8, 24, and 48 hours and halved median oral rescue opioid consumption, from 50 to 25 milligrams morphine equivalent. Ambulation rates at 48 and 72 hours and time to discharge were equivalent between groups. One limitation to note is the primary endpoint exhibited a floor effect, rendering it insensitive to between-group differences. Overall, incisional liposomal bupivacaine infiltration failed to reduce resting visual analog score pain at 48 hours in geriatric hip fracture arthroplasty, despite significant reductions in activity pain and oral rescue opioid use. Moving on, Murray and colleagues published in Lancet, titled Patellar Resurfacing in Total Knee Replacement, 20-year clinical and economic results of a large multi-center randomized controlled trial in the UK. This pragmatic multi-center randomized controlled trial randomized 1,715 primary total knee replacement patients to patellar resurfacing versus no resurfacing, with 20-year follow-up using Oxford Knee Score as the primary outcome. The primary endpoint showed no significant difference in Oxford Knee Score between groups, with a marginal difference of 0.76 points. No individual secondary clinical endpoint reached significance, though all trended toward resurfacing. The resurfacing group accumulated significantly more quality-adjusted life years at 20 years, a difference of 0.380, with identical total healthcare costs, yielding a 99% probability of cost-effectiveness above £10,000 per quality-adjusted life year. One limitation to note is the quality-adjusted life year advantage is substantially attenuated when mortality differences between groups are removed in sensitivity analysis, raising the possibility that the finding is confounded by differential survival rather than a true functional benefit of resurfacing. Overall, over 20 years, patellar resurfacing during total knee replacement produced no significant difference in Oxford Knee Score, but yielded significantly more quality-adjusted life years at equivalent total cost. Moving on, Wiyama and colleagues published in Journal of Orthopedic Surgery and Technology, titled Soft Tissue Balance and Quadriceps Muscle Strength are Associated with Patient-Reported Outcomes Following Total Knee Arthroplasty, Independent of Alignment Strategy. A prospective randomized trial. This randomized controlled trial randomized 50 patients to kinematic alignment or mechanical alignment total knee arthroplasty using a medial pivot design, assessing soft tissue balance intraoperatively and outcomes via Knee Society Score 2011 and quadriceps strength testing at 2 years. Despite confirmed differences in coronal plane alignment phenotype between groups, alignment strategy did not independently predict subjective outcomes on multivariate regression. Extension coronal gap angle independently predicted Knee Society Score satisfaction, while older age and greater quadriceps strength loss independently predicted worse functional activity. One limitation to note is the sample size of 25 per group is insufficient to detect moderate between-group differences, making the null finding potentially a type 2 error. Overall, alignment strategy was not an independent predictor of outcomes, while extension coronal gap angle and quadriceps strength loss independently predicted Knee Society Score satisfaction and functional activity, respectively. Moving on, Sinha and colleagues published an American Journal of Sports Medicine titled Anterior Cruciate Ligament Reconstruction with Attachment-Sparing Hamstring Autograft results in earlier graft maturation and better short-term clinical outcome in comparison to free graft, a randomized controlled trial. This randomized controlled trial compared tibial attachment-sparing hamstring autograft versus free hamstring graft anterior cruciate ligament reconstruction in 50 patients, using sequential MRI Figueroa scoring at 3, 6, and 9 months, alongside Lysholm, International Knee Documentation Committee, Tegner, and KT2000 assessments at 3, 6, 9, and 12 months. The attachment-sparing group demonstrated significantly higher Figueroa scores at all MRI time points, with 26.3% reaching score 4 at 3 months versus none in the free graft group, and 100% reaching score 5 at 9 months versus only 10% of free graft patients. Both groups showed significant clinical improvement in Lysholm, International Knee Documentation Committee, and Tegner scores, though the attachment-sparing group showed greater tibial tunnel widening despite superior graft maturation. One limitation to note is the 12-month maximum follow-up cannot determine whether the early MRI maturation advantage translates into reduced graft failure rates or superior long-term functional outcomes. Overall, attachment-sparing hamstring autograft achieved complete MRI graft maturation in 100% of patients at 9 months versus only 10% in free graft controls, with earlier ligamentization detectable as early as 3 months. Moving on, Potluri and colleagues published in Journal of Orthopedic Surgery and Technology, titled the John Charnley Award, a randomized controlled trial of dual mobility and single bearings for patients at high risk of dislocation following primary total hip arthroplasty. This multi-center randomized controlled trial randomized high-risk posterior approach primary total hip arthroplasty patients to dual mobility or single bearing constructs to determine whether dual mobility reduces dislocation. Dislocation rates were 0.7% in the dual mobility group versus 2.1% in the single bearing group, with 2-year dislocation-free survivorship of 99.0% versus 97.6%. All-cause revision rates and patient-reported outcome measures were equivalent at all time points. One limitation to note is the study was fundamentally underpowered due to a lower-than-anticipated overall dislocation rate. Overall, in high-risk primary total hip arthroplasty patients randomized to dual mobility versus single-bearing constructs, dislocation rates were 0.7% versus 2.1% at median 23 months, a threefold difference that failed to reach statistical significance. Moving on, Mokhtar and colleagues published in Knee Surgery, Sports Traumatology Arthroscopy, titled Biologically Enhanced Anterior Cruciate Ligament Reconstruction, Platelet-Rich Plasma or Bone Marrow Aspirate Concentrate Does Not Lead to Better Clinical or Radiological Outcomes, a randomized controlled trial of 175 cases with 2 years of follow-up. This randomized controlled trial compared standard semitendinosus quadruple autograft anterior cruciate ligament reconstruction against platelet-rich plasma or bone marrow aspirate concentrate augmented anterior cruciate ligament reconstruction across 175 patients with standardized technique and biologic preparation. At 2-year follow-up, no significant differences were found in Lysholm, International Knee Documentation Committee, Marks Activity Scale, or MRI graft signal intensity. Bone marrow aspirate concentrate augmented grafts demonstrated worse MRI signal intensity compared to controls, suggesting a potentially detrimental biological effect. One limitation to note is 2-year follow-up is insufficient to assess whether biologic augmentation affects long-term graft remodeling, tunnel incorporation, or re-rupture rates. Overall, platelet-rich plasma and bone marrow aspirate concentrate augmentation of hamstring autograft anterior cruciate ligament reconstruction produce no improvement in Lysholm, International Knee Documentation Committee, or MARC scores at 2 years, and bone marrow aspirate concentrate was associated with worse MRI signal intensity of the graft. Moving on, Patel and colleagues published in Spine, titled Full Endoscopic versus Microscopic Lumbar Discectomy for Lumbar Disc Herniation, a meta-analysis of randomized controlled trials. this meta-analysis of 17 randomized controlled trials compared full endoscopic discectomy versus microscopic discectomy for lumbar disc herniation across safety, recovery, and patient-reported outcome measure endpoints. Full endoscopic discectomy demonstrated statistically significant reductions in blood loss of 38.62 milliliters, return to work time of 22.68 days, postoperative infection, poor wound healing, and hematoma formation with a marginal back visual analog score benefit at 1 year and Oswestry Disability Index benefit at 2 years. Leg pain trajectories, operative time, and length of stay were equivalent. And full endoscopic discectomy carried greater fluoroscopic radiation exposure. One limitation to note is the 2-year Oswestry Disability Index benefit is derived from a subset of trials, making its reliability across the full cohort unclear. Overall, full endoscopic discectomy reduces return to work time by 22.68 days and wound-related complications versus microscopic discectomy, but increases fluoroscopic radiation exposure with no consistent long-term superiority in pain or Oswestry Disability Index. Moving on, Shrednitsky and colleagues published in Knee Surgery, Sports Traumatology, Arthroscopy, titled No Clinical and Functional Benefit After Medial Congruent Compared to Ultra-Congruent Total Knee Arthroplasty at 1 year, a prospective randomized controlled study. This randomized controlled trial compared medial congruent versus ultra-congruent tibial insert designs in 80 patients with varus knee osteoarthritis undergoing primary total knee arthroplasty, with 76 completing 12-month follow-up. Both groups demonstrated significant within-group improvement in knee society score, range of motion, Oxford knee score, forgotten joint score 12, and hospital for special surgery score, but no between-group difference was detected at any time point. Satisfaction rates were 94.7% in the medial congruent group versus 92.1% in the ultra-congruent group, with no significant difference in distribution. One limitation to note is 1-year follow-up cannot capture the primary mechanical concern distinguishing these designs: differential polyethylene wear and bearing stability under high demand or long-term use. Overall, medial congruent and ultra-congruent tibial inserts produced equivalent knee society scores and satisfaction rates at 1 year, with no statistically significant difference on any outcome measure. Moving on, Sotiriou and colleagues published in Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled 18F Fluoride PET-CT, Analyses of Postoperative Bone Mineralization Adjacent to Acetabular Cups in Total Hip Arthroplasty, a Randomized Clinical Trial. This randomized controlled trial compared early periprosthetic bone metabolic activity between trabecular titanium and hydroxyapatite-coated uncemented acetabular cups using 18F fluoride PET-CT at 4, 16, and 36 weeks in 28 patients undergoing primary total hip arthroplasty. Trabecular titanium cups showed 17% higher standardized uptake values at 4 weeks versus hydroxyapatite cups. Both groups exceeded healthy reference acetabulum standardized uptake values at 4 and 16 weeks. Radiographic and clinical scoring at 36 weeks supplemented the metabolic data. One limitation to note is the 36-week endpoint captures only early osseointegration and cannot determine whether the standardized uptake value advantage translates into superior long-term implant survival or reduced aseptic loosening rates. Overall, trabecular titanium acetabular cups demonstrated 17% higher periprosthetic metabolic activity at 4 weeks postoperatively compared to hydroxyapatite-coated cups, suggesting earlier osseointegration with trabecular titanium surfaces. Moving on, Salmon and colleagues published in Spine Journal, titled Long-Term Outcomes of Lumbar Total Disc Arthroplasty and Hybrid Constructs, a Systematic Review. This PRISMA-compliant systematic review evaluated long-term clinical outcomes, reoperation rates, and adjacent segment disease following single-level, multi-level, and hybrid lumbar total disc arthroplasty across PubMed, Embase, and Cochrane Central through December 2025. 18 studies, 4 randomized controlled trials, and 14 observational across 8 device types were included. randomized controlled trial evidence showed total disc arthroplasty comparable or superior to fusion at 5 to 14 years, with index-level revision rates ranging from 0.67% to 19.9%. Surgically defined adjacent segment disease was reported in 12 of 18 studies at rates of 0.8% to 5.1%, with no study demonstrating a definitive adjacent segment disease reduction attributable to total disc arthroplasty. One limitation to note is the absence of a standardized definition for surgically defined adjacent segment disease across studies precludes meaningful comparison of rates. Overall, across 18 studies and 3,346 patients with up to 19.4 years follow-up, lumbar total disc arthroplasty provides durable pain and functional improvement with index-level revision rates of 0.67% to 19.9%. But surgically defined adjacent segment disease rates of 0.8% to 5.1% do not demonstrate a definitive protective effect over fusion. Moving on, Shonda and colleagues published in American Journal of Sports Medicine, titled Intraoperative Zoledronic Acid for Arthroscopic Rotator Cuff Repair Results in Distinct Circulating MicroRNA Profiles, Indicating Improved Tendon-to-Bone Healing. This mechanistic substudy of a triple-blinded Phase 2 randomized controlled trial investigated whether intraoperative single-dose zoledronic acid alters circulating microRNA profiles in non-osteoporotic patients undergoing arthroscopic rotator cuff repair. Small RNA sequencing identified 6 microRNAs validated by RT2-PCR. At 2 days postoperatively, the zoledronic acid group showed significantly lower MYR143P, while the control group showed significantly lower MYR29A3P, MYR215P, MYR1925P, and MYR146A5P. Gene target analysis linked these differentially expressed microRNAs to collagen synthesis, vascularization, and anti-fibrotic and anti-inflammatory signaling pathways. One limitation to note is no structural healing outcome was reported within this substudy, so the observed microRNA differences cannot be directly correlated with actual tendon integrity. Overall, intraoperative single-dose zoledronic acid produced distinct circulating microRNA profiles at 2 days post-repair, including significantly lower MYR143P in the treatment group and preserved MYR29A3P, MYR215P, MYR1925P, and MYR146A5P versus controls, suggesting reduced enthesis inflammation and enhanced collagen synthesis as the molecular mechanism. Moving on, Lopez and colleagues published in Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery, titled Long-Term Outcomes of Reverse Shoulder Arthroplasty versus Non-Operative Treatment for 3 or 4-part Proximal Humerus Fractures in Elderly Patients. Results from a prior randomized clinical trial. This study reports long-term follow-up of a prior randomized controlled trial comparing reverse shoulder arthroplasty versus non-operative management for displaced 3 or 4-part proximal humerus fractures in patients aged 80 years or older. At mean 7.5 years, reverse shoulder arthroplasty demonstrated a significantly higher constant score of 62 versus 51, with the functional gap attributed to progressive deterioration in the non-operative cohort over time. Disabilities of the arm, shoulder, and hand score trended in favor of reverse shoulder arthroplasty, while pain and quality of life scores were equivalent. All non-operatively treated fractures healed in malposition, but none required conversion to reverse shoulder arthroplasty. One limitation to note is attrition from 62 to 29 patients over follow-up severely limits statistical power and introduces survivorship bias. Overall, at mean 7.5-year follow-up, reverse shoulder arthroplasty produced a significantly higher constant score compared to non-operative treatment for displaced 3 or 4-part proximal humerus fractures in patients aged 80 years or older. Moving on, Lee and colleagues published in Journal of Orthopedic Surgery and Technology, titled The EQ5D Quality of Life Score 3L Questionnaire Demonstrates Moderate Sealing Effects at 1 and 2 years after total hip arthroplasty. Preoperative predictors and clinical implications. This study evaluated sealing effects of the EQ5D quality of life score 3L in a prospective institutional total hip arthroplasty database of 7,871 cases. Collecting preoperative and 1 and 2 year postoperative EQ5D quality of life score 3L and Oxford HIP score data. Ceiling effects were observed in 47.5% at 1 year and 48.6% at 2 years. Independent predictors of ceiling attainment included female sex, younger age, lower socioeconomic deprivation, and higher preoperative EQ-5D quality of life score and Oxford HIP score. Paradoxically, ceiling-attaining patients demonstrated greater absolute improvement from baseline and were more likely to achieve minimal clinically important difference and patient-acceptable symptom state. One limitation to note is the EQ-5D quality of life score 3L's three-level response structure is the structural source of ceiling effects. And this study cannot determine whether the EQ-5D quality of life score 5L would eliminate the problem. Nearly half of primary total hip arthroplasty patients hit the EQ-5D quality of life score 3L ceiling score at 1 and 2 years. With a preoperative EQ-5D quality of life score of 0.534 or higher, predicting ceiling attainment. Moving on, Kubo and colleagues published in Journal of Orthopedic Surgery and Technology, titled, Pain Catastrophizing Improves After Total Knee Arthroplasty But Still Has a Negative Effect on Outcomes in Japanese Patients. This study examined longitudinal pain catastrophizing scale trajectories and their association with knee society score satisfaction in 267 Japanese total knee arthroplasty patients using linear mixed effects models and multivariable regression. Pain catastrophizing scale scores improved significantly between 6 weeks and 6 months postoperatively, but visual analog score plateaued after 6 weeks. Both concurrent one-year pain catastrophizing scale and prospective six-month pain catastrophizing scale independently predicted one-year knee society score satisfaction after adjustment for pain intensity. One limitation to note is the study is a single-center Japanese cohort, and pain catastrophizing scale normative values and catastrophizing prevalence differ across ethnicities, limiting direct application to Western total knee arthroplasty populations. Overall, in 267 Japanese total knee arthroplasty patients, one-year postoperative pain catastrophizing scale independently predicted knee society score satisfaction even after controlling for visual analog score pain, and six-month pain catastrophizing scale independently predicted one-year satisfaction. Moving on. Encinas and colleagues published in Journal of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, titled Clinical Outcomes and Complications of Surgical and Conservative Treatment for Jones Fractures, a Systematic Review. This systematic review compared surgical fixation versus conservative management for zone 2 fifth metatarsal Jones fractures across 10 studies and 998 patients. Surgical patients had significantly lower total complication rates of 8.5% versus 15.6%, lower non-union rates of 3.3% versus 11.6%, and superior American Orthopedic Foot and Ankle Society scores at final follow-up of 96.5 versus 84.1. The review concludes surgical management produces superior outcomes, though conservative treatment remains a viable option. One limitation to note is the marked disparity in cohort sizes, combined with the absence of patient activity level stratification, makes it impossible to exclude selection bias as the primary driver of outcome differences. Overall, surgical fixation of Jones fractures yields a significantly lower non-union rate and higher American Orthopedic Foot and Ankle Society scores compared to conservative management across 998 patients. Moving on. Acuna and colleagues published in Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled Alarmingly High Rates of Complications and Refracture Among Patients with Early Periprosthetic Femoral Fracture Within 30 Days After Total Hip Arthroplasty. This study used a large all-payer national database to compare outcomes of primary total hip arthroplasty patients sustaining periprosthetic femoral fracture within 30 days versus 31 to 90 days, 91 days to 1 year, and no fracture, using propensity score matching on age, sex, and comorbidity burden. The 30-day or less fracture cohort demonstrated significantly worse 2-year survivorship free of infection of 87.8% versus 97.7%, refracture of 57.4% versus 99.5%, and reoperation of 48.5% versus 97.6% compared to matched non-fracture controls. Early fracture patients also had significantly higher 90-day complication rates than patients fracturing at any later time point. One limitation to note is the database cannot distinguish Vancouver B2-B3 fractures from B1 fractures, meaning the high refracture and reoperation rates may reflect undertreated loose stem fractures. Early periprosthetic femoral fracture within 30 days of primary total hip arthroplasty carries a 2-year reoperation-free survivorship of only 48.5% compared to 97.6% in matched non-fracture controls. Moving on, Mohammed and colleagues published in Journal of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, titled Z-type clavicle fractures in adults, a retrospective comparative study of outcomes. This study asked whether Z-type midshaft clavicle fractures, defined by complete displacement with a vertically oriented butterfly fragment of 1 cm or greater, carry higher failure rates with non-operative management than standard displaced midshaft fractures, and whether operative fixation reduces unplanned reoperations. Among non-operatively managed fractures, Z-type and non-Z-type patterns had statistically equivalent rates of surgery to promote healing at 17% versus 22%. Surgical management of Z-type fractures reduced surgery to promote healing to 1.1% versus 17% non-operative. And when implant removal was excluded, non-operative Z-type fractures had a significantly higher unplanned reoperation rate of 20% versus 4.2%. One limitation to note is the retrospective design with no standardized protocol for operative versus non-operative management. Overall, non-operatively managed Z-type clavicle fractures had a 17% rate of surgery to promote healing, identical to non-Z-type fractures. But surgical fixation reduced that rate to 1.1%, while excluding implant removal revealed a significantly higher unplanned reoperation burden in the non-surgical group. Moving on, Lex and colleagues published in Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled The Effect of Bariatric Surgery on Complication Risk Following Total Hip Arthroplasty in Patients with Morbid Obesity. This population-based retrospective cohort from Ontario asked whether prior bariatric surgery reduces major surgical complications in morbidly obese patients undergoing primary total hip arthroplasty. Using multivariable logistic regression on administrative data, patients with prior bariatric surgery had the highest composite complication and periprosthetic joint infection rates of any subgroup. Even those achieving body mass index less than 40 kg per square meter post-bariatric surgery carried significantly elevated complication and periprosthetic joint infection risk versus body mass index matched non-bariatric controls. Prior bariatric surgery did not reduce revision risk in any subgroup. One limitation to note is administrative data cannot determine the interval between bariatric surgery and total hip arthroplasty, which is critical because nutritional deficiencies and immune dysregulation directly affect infection susceptibility. Overall, among morbidly obese total hip arthroplasty patients who achieved body mass index less than 40 kg per square meter after bariatric surgery, major complication risk remained 84% higher and periprosthetic joint infection risk 236% higher compared to non-bariatric patients with equivalent body mass index. Moving on, Bowler and colleagues published in Journal of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, titled Glenoid Pathology is Similar Between Osteoarthritis and Postcapsulopathy Arthropathy, a propensity-matched analysis. This study asked whether postcapsulopathy arthropathy produces distinct 3D glenoid wear patterns compared to primary glenohumeral osteoarthritis using propensity-matched CT-based morphologic analysis. Glenoid version, humeral head subluxation, vault loss, maximum erosion depth, and biplanar deformity rates were equivalent between groups. Only superior inclination differed, that's 7.5 degrees versus 4.3 degrees. Open and arthroscopic capsulopathy subcohorts showed no morphologic differences in any parameter. One limitation to note is the retrospective design, with no index surgical data, prevents correlation between specific capsulopathy technique details and the observed morphologic outcomes. Glenoid morphology in post-capsulopathy arthropathy is nearly identical to primary glenohumeral osteoarthritis across all measured parameters except superior inclination, a difference unlikely to be clinically meaningful. Moving on, Xu and colleagues published in Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled, A Fully Automated Multi-Stage Deep Learning System for Lanky Classification, Enhanced Diagnostic Precision in Adolescent Idiopathic Scoliosis. This study asked whether a fully automated multi-stage deep learning pipeline could perform end-to-end lanky classification from full spine radiographs with expert-level accuracy. The system used vertebral segmentation, lumbar pedicle localization, and a fusion classification module trained and validated on 650 subjects aged 10 to 18 with Cobb angles of 25 to 89 degrees. Overall lanky classification accuracy was 95.6%, with Cobb angle agreement with experts yielding intra-class correlation coefficient of 0.969 to 0.976. One limitation to note is the dataset is 95% Han Chinese from a single center, and performance on Western or ethnically diverse adolescent idiopathic scoliosis populations has not been established. Overall, a fully automated deep learning system achieved 95.6% overall accuracy for lanky classification of adolescent idiopathic scoliosis directly from spinal radiographs, with Cobb angle intraclass correlation coefficient of 0.969 to 0.976 versus expert measurement. Moving on, Lam and colleagues published in Journal of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, titled Facility Cost Differences Between Single Stage and Two Stage Exchange for Chronic Periprosthetic Joint Infection, a Time-Driven Activity-Based Costing Analysis. This study used time-driven activity-based costing to compare itemized facility costs of single-stage versus two-stage exchange for chronic periprosthetic joint infection after total hip arthroplasty and total knee arthroplasty at a single academic center, excluding patients with soft tissue defects or extensive bone loss requiring endoprosthesis. Single-stage revision was significantly cheaper across all cost categories for both total hip arthroplasty and total knee arthroplasty. Total surgical time was also significantly shorter for single-stage procedures, with total hip arthroplasty at 175 versus 365 minutes and total knee arthroplasty at 162 versus 256 minutes. One limitation to note is the study captures only facility costs at a single institution and excludes downstream costs such as antibiotic therapy and readmissions, which could alter the true cost differential. Overall, single-stage exchange for chronic periprosthetic joint infection costs 54% less than two-stage exchange for total knee arthroplasty and 58% less for total hip arthroplasty, driven primarily by a substantial difference in implant costs. Moving on, Sadoun and colleagues published in Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery titled Salto Talaris Total Ankle Arthroplasty at a Minimum of 10 Years of Follow-Up, Survival and Radiographic and Clinical Outcomes in a Series of 144 Angles. This multi-surgeon, single-center retrospective study evaluated long-term survival and functional outcomes of the Salto Talaris fixed-bearing total ankle arthroplasty in 164 consecutive ankles, implanted from 2009 to 2013. Kaplan-Meier survival free from any tibiotalar surgery was 94.1% at 10 years. Survival to metallic component revision was 96.2%. Conversion to arthrodesis was required in only 1% of cases. At final follow-up, median American Orthopedic Foot and Ankle Society score was 98, and 43% of patients reported a forgotten joint. One limitation to note is the single-center retrospective design limits generalizability, as surgeon volume and institutional expertise likely inflate survival estimates. Salto Talaris total ankle arthroplasty demonstrates 96.2% implant survival and 99% survival to arthrodesis conversion at 10 years across 144 ankles with minimum 10-year follow-up. Moving on, Master Costas and colleagues published in Journal of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons titled Anterior Lumbar Interbody Fusion Offers Safer Inpatient Profiles But at Greater Cost Compared with Posterolateral Fusion, National Outcomes for Spondylolisthesis from 2016 to 2022. This study used the National Inpatient Sample to compare inpatient outcomes between anterior lumbar interbody fusion and posterolateral fusion for elective degenerative lumbar spondylolisthesis. In adjusted models, posterolateral fusion carried higher odds of transfusion, dural tear, composite adverse events, and non-routine discharge. Anterior lumbar interbody fusion had shorter length of stay of 2.81 versus 3.31 days, but $11,500 higher mean inflation-adjusted costs. One limitation to note is the absence of patient-reported outcomes and radiographic data makes it impossible to determine whether anterior lumbar interbody fusion's inpatient safety advantage translates into superior functional recovery or long-term value. Overall, anterior lumbar interbody fusion for degenerative spondylolisthesis carries fewer perioperative complications than posterolateral fusion, but costs $11,500 more per admission. Moving on, Sato and colleagues published in Journal of Pediatric Orthopedics, titled Short Leg Cast versus Long Leg Cast Immobilization for Pediatric Tibia Fractures, a systematic review and meta-analysis. This PRISMA-registered systematic review and meta-analysis compared short leg casting versus long leg casting for pediatric tibial shaft and distal physial fractures across 6 studies. No significant differences were found in coronal angulation, sagittal angulation, cast duration, or complication rates between groups. Short leg casting was associated with significantly shorter time to weight bearing of 2.29 weeks and faster union of 1.21 weeks, with findings consistent across tibial shaft and Salter-Harris distal tibial fracture subgroups. One limitation to note is all 6 included studies are retrospective, introducing selection bias in which fracture patterns receive short leg versus long leg casting. Overall, short leg casting achieves equivalent coronal and sagittal alignment to long leg casting in pediatric tibial fractures, while reducing time to weight bearing by 2.29 weeks and time to union by 1.21 weeks. And finally, Lay and colleagues published in Journal of Orthopedic Trauma, titled Early Definitive Fixation and Risk of Deep Surgical Site Infection After Tibial Plateau Open Reduction and Internal Fixation, a systematic review and meta-analysis. This meta-analysis asked whether early definitive fixation within 72 hours of Schatzker 1 to 6 tibial plateau fractures reduces deep surgical site infection versus delayed fixation. 9 comparative studies were pooled using random effects models. Early fixation within 72 hours significantly reduced deep surgical site infection of 8.7% versus 16.1%, and overall infection of 14.0% versus 19.6%, with no significant difference in superficial infection, wound dehiscence, wound necrosis, or reoperation rates. One limitation to note is all included studies are observational, with heterogeneous definitions of delayed fixation and inconsistent reporting of soft tissue grade, making it impossible to determine whether timing or patient selection drives the infection difference. Overall, early definitive open reduction and internal fixation of tibial plateau fractures within 72 hours reduces deep surgical site infection risk by 46% compared to delayed fixation. That wraps up this week's Ortho Digest Rundown. 25 studies reviewed. Head to orthodigest.com for the full write-ups.